This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us. Matt Stranick, and I could not be more stoked on the latest edition of the AdNonTech Conversation Series to be joined by an author, an academic, and a seriously creative individual on a whole number of realms and fronts, too numerous to mention here. Going to try and put some of that into the WordPress post, folks, that goes along with the notes and whatnot. I could not honestly be more pleased, though, for many, many different reasons to be joined by. So here's my first question, sir. It's A.J. Hartley on all the books, on the covers, but then also on your academic University of North Carolina website, Andrew Hartley. And because of the academic sort of bent to the show, quasi-academic, I was sort of going to open up with, Dr. Hartley, as the case may be. So I guess my opening gambit, sir, is generally to people on the show is who is AJ, who is Andrew, and what are you about as a writer, academic, and creative person, sir?
Sure. Obviously, I was born Andrew, and the AJ came about when I sold my first novel in the early 14th century, whenever that was, 2004, I think. And the protagonist was a woman, and the publisher made the decision that they didn't want to give away the fact that I wasn't. Yeah. So.
Career was made, sir.
Yeah.
Well,
so it's bizarre. Yeah. So my first novel was published as A.J. Hartley. There was no bio on the book, no photograph. And
question: what was the name of the book, and is it still in print?
The book was called The Mask of Atreus. It's still in print, though now with a different publisher. It was originally published by Penguin Berkeley, and it's now out with Falstaff. I got snippy Amazon reviews that says Miss Hartley doesn't like men very much.
Oh my lord, bro. For your first book, that's kind of savage. I mean, it's cool, but it's kind of savage in its own unique kind of way. So they didn't want to puncture the gender mystique. I don't know, man. Again, speaking to somebody who specializes in Shakespeare, right? Because... again, I have so many questions about so many areas of your endeavor. Folks, let's just be straight. I am here ostensibly to talk with Andrew. Like, if we were in a faculty meeting, what would we be calling you? If I can just, I don't want to...
In a faculty meeting or in a Shakespeare conference or something, everybody calls me Andrew. Almost everybody calls me AJ, though I have published a couple of books under a different name, as Andrew Hart. But most of the time when I was publishing fiction, I kind of thought that they might want me to do, because I do a lot of genre hopping. I move in terms of both age group and so on. And I thought they might want different names. But generally, that has not been the case. When I started doing my first books were all mystery thriller things. And when I started doing fantasy, I thought they might want to switch. But they specifically wanted me to stay as AJ.
You are a talented bunch of writers, sir. I gotta say, I mean, honestly, And again, just to kind of jump into it, really, with both feet, as it were, honestly, you know, we have A.J. Hartley, the serious author with many, many books to his credit, as a collaborator with a pretty significant, you know, partner, shall we say, in another creative endeavor, kind of high profile. His name's Tom DeLonge. He plays in a kind of a garage band of sorts, very high profile musician. And seriously, though, in all honesty, as a fan of punk music, you know, with tattoos and just friggin' the vinyl collection and every other thing associated with that, I mean, you know, I'm sure you get the whole run of like, what's it like collaborating with Tom? And we are so not here for that, although I will kind of throw that in kind of a little bit later. This is the latest project. A.J. Hartley's latest project is the novel Trinity, and it is a work of historical fiction, and he is collaborating significantly on it with Tom DeLonge. And there are videos up on the YouTube channel, which we're, of course, going to have along with all the resources, publisher, and otherwise associated with the book. This has been rolling out for a while. I do wonder from a practical standpoint, because we're trying to demystify what it's like to be a, what do you call it, multi-talented, academically respected, world-traveling, rock star collaborating novelist. We're trying to puncture that mystique just a little bit for the whatever academic people who check this stuff out, right? So, I mean, that's a long windup. That's a Canadianism, by the way. And I guess I wonder, what is it about Shakespeare? Did you jump into that with both feet? Are your parents literary people? What's the early trajectory of your career, sir?
Well, that's a complicated question. My father was a high school drama teacher.
Awesome. I like him already.
Yeah, and my mother was a primary school teacher. So there were
also very cool.
There were books around the house, but I wouldn't call them sort of literary people per se. And I grew up in a very working class industrial town.
Northern England, right?
Say again?
That's Northern England on your bio, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Preston in Lancashire. And you know, so as a teenager, I was sort of bookish. I read a lot, but that wasn't really a big part of the culture that I grew up in. And I didn't really get into Shakespeare until I went to university, and I got into it because I was seeing a lot. I went to the University in Manchester, and there's a terrific theater there called the Royal Exchange.
I'm sorry to horn in, bro. I'm sorry. It's just, again, I'm sort of just trying to unpack from people, like from the various standpoints. I'm trying to think on behalf of somebody who may have a question in the chat right now. And so one of those questions or observations really is that Manchester is such a storied, creative town, like on all fronts in terms of arts and particularly with the music. I mean, that must have just been an incredibly exciting time because if we're talking like when you would have been stepping into that, I mean, what, that's late 90s? So that's
It was mid 80s.
Mid 80s. Well, even that's even better then, isn't it? I'm sorry. I just got my decades wrong there. Math is a mess.
But
all those great alternative and early grunge and, you know, grunge. You didn't have grunge in Britain, but. I mean, wow, so much going on in that city and on that scene across the years, right?
Yep. I once met Morrissey in a pub. in the year, you know, obviously in early Smith's days. And
sick. That is legitimately sick. So I'm sorry, sir. I just kind of had to act on behalf of the hypothetical person who would be interested in that. And so, again, sort of... what do you remember being passionate about as narrative? I mean, what was it sort of a moment for you where you went like, okay, writing isn't just going to be something that I, you know, kind of dabble in or try. When did it sort of, you know, was it like after, well after your first novel was in circulation? Because Folks, this man has an unbelievably prolific resume. That's academic CV. That's up there. What, bibliography? That's the word I was searching for. 25 books is what it says.
I think
on your. 20,
I think it's 26 novels and about what, 7 or 8 academic books as well. So.
And 7 or 8 So. I mean, the level of, I was telling my mom about this, you know, in the car, and I was just, and she was like, that's an incredibly high amount of publication. But then on the other hand, like Stephen King puts out like a book a year thereabouts. So, I mean, so first of all, to back it up, strong literacy interest, what was that like for you? And then at what point did you sort of realize that, you know, this was going to be a level of output you were capable of sustaining with regards to that endeavor?
I mean, I never thought about output as a target per se. I wrote my first novel when I was like 19, but I didn't get published for 20 years. And in those days, there was no such thing as self-publishing in any meaningful way. So, you know, if you didn't get a publishing deal, you went back to the drawing board and did another and another. And I think, you know, for me, this was just how I processed reality. I was always sort of a storyteller and living in my own head some. And so, yeah, I wrote 8 complete novels before I was published.
Whoa! Folks, all you warriors who try like national novel writing, you know, a month and then kind of throw it away. I mean, that is a serious commitment to labor and craft. And I mean, again, so just much kind of respect to going through the gears, you know, putting yourself into that. I do wonder, did those projects find a life after, you know, your first sort of, because what's the expression? It takes your whole life to write your first novel. And then from there on out, you know, you're kind of working in a different realm. So do those other efforts exist out there for public consumption in some way, sir?
Some do and some don't. The very first novel that I wrote has never been published. I don't know that it ever will. Yeah, it wasn't very good. So, you know, I mean, that's
how it is.
But by the same token, you know, I mean, I published a couple of fantasy novels with Tor almost 20 years after they rejected them the first time.
The name has elevated the game a little bit in that respect. Or, you know, when Stephen King kind of came out, here's the Bachman books, you know, mm-hmm. like this wild, you know, pulp stuff or whatnot. And so, and you're a man of apparently many pseudonyms. So I guess I wonder, in terms of sort of over the course of the time you've been involved, right, that you've been actively writing and actively publishing, you know, and during the time, that apprenticeship period, is that sort of where academia sort of comes in as sort of a livelihood, so you can kind of move around? I mean, again, for people who don't necessarily get the whole, you know, creative person who also works at a university in an English department, my first degree is in English. I didn't go beyond the BA level with that. But again, I just wonder, what's that experience like, you know, being somebody with university serious commitments, right? Because it says, you know, are you still on the staff of the university, sir, at this point?
I mean, technically, yes, but I'm emeritus, so I am.
Emeritus!
Yeah.
That's something for the show notes, sir. That is the Robinson Professor of Shakespeare. You held that role. Was that sort of the last stage of your career with the academic kind of work? And I guess I, again, just to sort of back up to the original thing, what's it like sort of juggling the academic work with the significant creative output?
Yeah, I mean, after my undergraduate degree, I worked in Japan for a couple of years. And so when I got back to the UK, it didn't really fit. And I was looking for reasons to go to the States for personal reasons. So I went to grad school there.
Awesome.
And did my MA and PhD in Boston. And then, you know, there's a point where you realize you've made a career choice without necessarily ever actually making that choice, you know? I think this happens to a lot of students. They're good at being students, so they stay students, and then suddenly they're academics. And as you say, you know, this meant that I could apply for jobs and have a steady stream of income and do academic writing while I was still writing fiction. But at that point, the fiction had started to feel like a hobby. It was something I was writing mostly for myself or to circulate amongst a few family and friends kind of thing. And I was still sending it out, but I wasn't thinking of it as a professional thing. In fact, weirdly, no. I didn't really get my first, I didn't get land my first novel until I was poised to move to North Carolina from Georgia to the Robinson Professorship, which I've had for the I had it for 18 years.
Whoa! Pardon me, but in academic terms, I mean, I've had experiences on university faculties, and it can be like knives out, you know, sometimes. Fragile egos, intellectual property, you know, like bureaucratic and academic and disciplinary silos. Congrats to you for kind of holding down the fort on that particular significant profile for a period of time. And you must have found it very significantly personally rewarding to kind of be on that file because, I mean, really, just because otherwise you would have opted out of it, I presume, right? So what was it about that role that really kind of motivated you? And I swear we're going to talk more about real author-ish kind of stuff, but the academic in me is just kind of like, I'm up here in Canada. It's kind of a different deal, different milieu, so to speak, than what you experience for that stuff in the States or in the UK, for that matter. What was that? If you could just speak to what that role was like for you, why you were there with it for so long, and what it sort of fulfilled for you, if I could say that.
I mean, I loved it in many respects, I think. And, you know, I had a great position. That it's an endowed chair, which means that, you know, my teaching commitments were relatively light. They expected me to publish primarily. So I did a lot of work as a sort of journal editor for a decade. But I was primarily a performance scholar. So
awesome.
I also do a lot of practical theater work, both as a dramaturg and as a director. And I love that. I love working with students. It's probably the thing I miss most, having been effectively retired for a year. That's what I miss.
Emeritus. Sorry, just emeritus. You earned it, bro. That's just, don't mean to horn in. Please continue.
So, but as you say, you know, it's a very different world. And from publishing, especially because I publish, I'm a genre fiction guy, you know, in the same way that Shakespeare was. So I'm not writing what would be considered the kind of literary fiction that gets studied in university. I'm writing the kind of stories that I enjoy reading. So, you know, I was fortunate in that the university where I finished up valued that as part of my output. What happened actually was that when I was going up for full professor, I had a conversation with the dean, and she said, well, I assume that you, and by then I was publishing fiction, but she said, well, when you prepare your documents, I assume you'll just talk about your academic work. And I said, yeah, sure. And then I thought about it and I was like, wait a minute. Last time I published a novel, you had me signing copies for the board of trustees or whatever. Right. So I said, so this is clearly something that the university values.
Can I please put this novel on my annual report to justify the taxpayers' investment in my, you know, academic position? Like,
right.
Spoke to like a true dean. Like, they had me signing copies, but, you know, when it's like, you know, can I count this because it adds to the value of the brand? You know, it's like, nah.
Well, they changed their position and said, actually, yeah, you're right. So from that point on, my fiction was considered part of my job, so long as I didn't dip my productivity as a Shakespeare scholar, which I was fine with. I wasn't looking to get away from that, but it did mean that I was producing twice as much. But as I say, I was fortunate in that my teaching load was light, and writing was kind of what they expected me to do. So, you know.
Awesome. So you sort of had the opportunity to almost build in. I do wonder whether, you know, just because of your significant, ongoing endeavors, right? 8 novels written before publication, folks. Again, you weekend warriors who kind of want to write a book. It's like, you know, in On Writing, one of the great books on craft, for my money, Stephen King, he's sort of like, people come up to him and like, you know, I always want to write a book. And his response being, well, I always wanted to be a brain surgeon, you know. It's kind of, it's just the work you put in your 1,100 hours, right? And then, you know, you can just sort of allow the process to kind of take hold. And then you can kind of, you have to think less about the mechanics of it, and it just becomes sort of a normal mode of expression. And one of the things that I really appreciate about your significant social media presence, sir, I reached out to you just because I scanned your Instagram in the first instance, and I just thought, these little 1 minute or whatever videos of you, it looks like you're at your local bookstore, just kind of, you know, holding, you know, just whether somebody's there or not, you know, just kind of speaking to a 1 or 2 minute snippet of, you know, what it's like being a writer, what you're up to, you know, the collaboration with Tom and whatnot. I mean, I literally did my doctoral work on, you know, education through social presence and online stuff. So to me, I'm just like, this is incredibly accessible to people. It lets them kind of come into where you are with your narrative worlds, plural, from a number of vantage points. So I guess I just wonder, as somebody who's sort of seen the traditional print media sort of shift into a more digital ecology, I do wonder what's that been like, you know, seeing that shift, the paradigm shift from largely print to digital, and does that kind of, does that factor into your thinking as you work on these projects?
I don't know that it changes my thinking as I'm working on the project. It certainly changes the way that I try to sort of make people aware of those projects after the fact. And again, this is, as you suggest, this is a shift. You know, 20 years ago, I didn't really have to think about marketing and publicity and stuff like that. And now, because the industry has changed so much, even with the biggest presses and with the biggest deals with the biggest presses, authors are still expected to carry a lot of the weight of getting the word out about their work, which, you know, is something that none of us trained us for. And, you know, it can be burdensome. I enjoy it to a point, but I don't like the feeling, the sort of constant sense of responsibility of, I can't just have a day to myself. At some point, I have to produce something to be consumed more widely.
Otherwise, and so we are so grateful for you in that spirit for kind of, you know, giving up a bit of your time here. Because again, this is the sort of thing where you probably just get all kinds of random whatever requests. So from my standpoint, I just thought the most legit, respectful way to sort of reach out to this person is just through the author website. It's ajhartley.net, sir, your website?
Yep.
Yeah, awesome. And it was literally just, you know, dear sir, I'm a guy with a podcast, academic-ish, and so, you know, an appropriate response. And so, again, though, those videos and such, it's a nice way of sort of keeping in touch with people, I would assume. I do wonder, you know, for those of us who haven't been tracking the full narrative, this is my least interesting question for me, but I know people who are watching this are just going to be like, why didn't you ask this? So, I mean, can you just briefly please describe how you and Tom intersected as collaborative partners? How long this has been going on? There's a 3 Secret Machines books. Is that correct? Can you just sort of give an overview of that project for people who wouldn't be aware of it so far?
Yeah, I mean, Tom reached out to me just under 10 years ago.
Okay.
And what actually happened is that he, I guess, reached out to my agent, and I don't know that he knew who I was at the time, but he was looking for a partner to work with on the Secret Machines books, and my agent contacted me and asked if I wanted to be considered.
Okay.
And I had a couple of projects that were in the works that were on submission, the Steeplejack series, which this one,
Radical.
Which had been on submission for a long time and didn't seem to be going anywhere. And another book, which became Cathedrals of Glass, which also had been on submission for ages and wasn't going anywhere. And so I said, yeah, sure, okay, I will be considered. So she sent him, along with some other people, I guess, in the agency, sent some of my previous novels, and he liked what he read, and we started having meetings and conversations. So I signed on to do the Secret Machines books, a trilogy. We've only published the first two so far.
Okay, pardon me for not knowing
No,
that,
that's
but
fine.
it's rad. It's rad. And I'm not going to even pick into the minutia of the rights and the licensing and all that. Folks, that's what the notes are for. It sounds fascinating, and while I'm surely interested in, the what's and the why fors of the project, I'm really more interested for the purposes of the show and for the, I suppose, limited academic-ish audience for the show, the creative component of this, because it goes from sort of, I'm looking for a collaborator and I am a collaborator who's sort of here to work with. I've watched some of the videos, right? Some of the videos that have come out in promotion of Trinity, and it seems like over what you've described as a 10-year period has now just been through interactions and emails and I assume FaceTime meetings and the like. Even though you're sort of traveling in different paths, geographically, and Andrew is married to a woman, a Japanese. You have your partner's Japanese, and you're right. You
He's Japanese American.
Japanese American. My kid's mom, Korean lady. So I sort of know about the spending some of the summer with the fam in, the older country and then the other country and then jumping around. And I guess, there's so many sort of different aspects to the collaboration. Can you just describe how that's evolved? And sorry for the kind of long-winded kind of anecdote into that. It's a Canadianism, sir.
Initially, Tom and I spent a lot of time talking on the phone, and then he flew me out to California, and we spent, I don't know, 3 days or so sort of just brainstorming and figuring out how he had this sort of broad idea for what this story was going to be. And it spans a lot of time periods and a lot of places, and so part of my job initially was to try and figure out a viable architecture for the book, that
That's
would
a
allow
great
it.
way of putting it. That's a great way of putting it. A viable architecture, the structure, the craft of the writing. That seems like something that you are going to definitely bring to the situation, is it not? And particularly as a scholar of drama, right? I wonder if you see sort of overlap, significant overlap between, what you've sort of observed in a career with Shakespeare, and, are working that into. I mean, the obvious, for a wide, audience is there, but can I ask how that kind of informs what you do on these projects?
Part of what I love about Shakespeare is that he takes all his characters seriously, no matter how small they are. There's always something. And I get this when I work with actors a lot in the rehearsal room, that the actors are always discovering little details, little, however small the role, to suggest personality and personal history and various things. So, that's part of what I always try to bring to a novel, a sense of that every character, no matter how minor their function within the story, has to feel like a fully fledged three-dimensional presence with a personal history and, ideas and issues and problems of their own, no matter who they are. And if I can do that throughout the story, then the whole thing starts to feel lived and alive. and real. And that's particularly important when you're dealing with fantasy or sci-fi or paranormal or anything where you're asking the reader to believe in things that they might not normally believe, because then you have to really nail the real stuff, and that helps you get their trust on the stuff that is made up.
I love that you are bringing the element of trust into that. And just as you were sort of describing, you know, that, I was thinking you're almost like you take it seriously, sir, earning the right for the audience to suspend their disbelief by getting the practical, tangible, you know, gritty kind of rewarding details. You build it up from a world, as it were. You need the supporting architecture. And again, I'm in Eastern Canada, like I'm literally right next to Maine. So I just think in terms of Stephen King, you know, kind of terminology, because I live basically in Stephen King country, you know, Canadian aspect of it. And, you know, but that's what he's known for, right? Or, you know, any of these other sort of you call them airport book sellers. I mean, the reliable ones, you know, where it's just like, I'm going to take this and I'm going to step into this world with, you know, the any of the reliable paperback. I've got such respect for wide ranging genre. So what's your preferred, speaking of genre, what's the mode you feel most comfortable in generally, or does it sort of vary depending on what the project and where your interests are?
Yeah, it varies on the project. Usually if I get the starting point of a story, whether that's a plot point or a character idea or even a location or something like that, usually the sense of the readership, the age group, and the genre comes very quickly. And I have to nail that down fast because it affects voice. I'm going to write very differently depending on who I expect to be reading and what genre I'm working in. And that has always been something that I enjoy, because I've always read widely. You know, so I don't particularly want to write a version of the same story over and over and over, you know. I mean, I respect writers who do that, but and there's a lot of pressure within the industry for you to do that. You know, that the sure way to be very successful is to basically write one thing so that your name is synonymous with a particular kind of story.
You heard it here, weekend warriors. this is serious literary advice. Basically, let the algorithm do the writing. You know, take your formula, take your template, as it were, to use an educational technology term, and just really just kind of stamp it in, right? It's like just fill in the details, as it were, into your quote unquote formula. So having like something that values the experience of the audience. You mentioned this repeatedly during this conversation, and we are starting to wind her down, folks. We are at this point, I am kind of steering us into the final descent of this chat to be mindful of the time. But that's going to be one of my major takeaways from what we've talked about here, is that you are sort of, you know, respecting the audience you know, bringing them something, you know, at a detail by detail, sentence by sentence kind of level that they can appreciate. And I think that that's probably something that I've certainly noticed as I've been reading through the awesome book Trinity, wherein you have really made that world something, this historical fictional world, something that I can just step in and inhabit. And how gratifying is that for you when, after such a long gestation process, that this finally comes out? And what's it like, you know, going forward? Because for sure, you know, you've got multiple projects on the go. How does this fit into what you got going on for the rest of the summer, and what's even next for AJ Hartley, if I can ask, sir?
Yeah, I mean, part of the way I deal with books, to be honest, is that almost as soon as I'm done, I'm done. I'm on to the next thing. So, you know, it's always a bit odd when a book comes out, like Trinity. I did a signing here the other day, and people are asking questions about the book, and I always have to sort of Oh yeah, what was I doing there? Because
was a
I've
long
written,
time ago.
yeah,
Yes.
I mean, because the publishing process takes a long time. I've written another novel since then, and half of a new one.
Anything you can
So,
share about the novel that you've written? Anything whatsoever?
I mean, it's another Tom project. It's not
Okay.
part of Secret Machines, but beyond that, I don't think I'm allowed to say anything yet.
Had to ask, had to take the opportunity.
Sure.
That just sounds so awesome. And there's just such, as you say, like a long period in between, the idea and finally a what, like something that the, public gets to use. It's just, I always think of it as just kind of like the tip of the iceberg, almost like the time the thing actually, with this mass that's moving underneath it. I guess I just wonder now, are there any contemporary authors that you'd like to shout out as we kind of, or anybody, any parties or individuals that you think are just doing an exemplary job of what they do in writing across any area of endeavor?
I mean, as I say, I read fairly eclectically. My go-to is always, lately at least, has been the late Terry Pratchett, who I can just go back to over and over.
Awesome. Awesome writer, people. You got to check him out if you haven't. That's
Yeah.
awesome. Okay. Well, again, honestly, sir, that was probably the full extent of anything that I hope to accomplish through this conversation. I am supremely, seriously grateful for your time. We're going to have all of AJ Hartley's links to his new work, Trinity with Tom DeLonge, but then also to his some 2.5 dozen other works and novels, depending on how you count the pseudonyms, and also a very legitimate and very respected academic with a seriously strong academic CV, which all of this stuff is publicly available. I recommend you start with his Instagram, and then move on to the YouTube channel because there's all kinds of fantastic resources there, educators. And honestly, I don't have anything above and beyond that except to say, AJ, it's been Andrew, Dr. Hartley, it's been an absolute thrill, and I sincerely mean that. I consider this just an absolute high point of the show to have somebody of your significant profile and stature, coming on to the show. So in all honesty, thank you. And I also know that it's very much a collaborative effort, all of these things. Editors, agents, rock stars. So, much respect to everybody who is, part of your collaboration and to the contributions that they make as well. Thank you very
Thank
much
you.
for joining us, sir.
Thanks, I appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Take care, everybody. I'm going to end the recording now. Bye for now.